Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Monday, the 20th of March, 2017. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Saners in Sitka Sound had their first opening yesterday afternoon and caught about 3,500 tons of herring. Fish are caught for their eggs or roe, which are sold in Asia. Fishery managers try to schedule openings when the fish are close to spawning and have a mature roe content that commands a good price. Fishery had been on two-hour notice since Friday morning. Guideline harvest level overall for the fishery this year, over 14,000 tons. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game planned no opening for today to allow companies to process yesterday's catch, but told the fleet to be ready for another opening tomorrow, depending on results of more aerial surveys and roe sampling. For the second time in as many years, Petersburg welcomes home a state championship basketball team. Families, friends, and fans gathered at the airport yesterday afternoon for a noise parade celebrating the third state championship for the boys' basketball team. The Vikings beat Metlakatla 46-26 Saturday night, securing the 2A championship. Petersburg trailed in that game after the first quarter 12-6 and had a slim lead at halftime 21-17 before pulling away in the second half. Vikings senior Stuart Kahn says it was defense that won the game.
They went scoreless for 11 minutes in the second half, the whole third quarter and a couple minutes into the fourth, and that's what gave us the W. So
Petersburg switched up its defense for that final game and focused on containing Metlakatla's top scorer. Petersburg senior Blaine Volk explains.
Stopped Danny Marsden. He was by far their best scorer, so we threw that on him, had Mark Neidefer guard him and Dale Strong, and they completely shut him down, and we kept him out of the key.
Volk was named Player of the Year for that championship matchup. Kahn was named Player of the Year, and Rick Brock was named Coach of the Year, and I spoke with Brock about the state title.
Well, how does it feel? You guys were one game away last year, and now you got the championship this year.
Yeah, you know, you don't get many chances in life for do-overs, I guess, and it was a focal point of ours all year to try to get back to the game, and once we were there, we talked a lot about finishing the job, so much better feeling than last year.
And familiar opponent, and you guys really shut them down and did something a little bit different in that final game?
Yeah, we did. We had kind of talked about mixing up our defense at before the game on that morning. We talked to my assistant coaches and stuff and thought about trying something different. And the way we started the game and the way they were playing, I knew we had to change things up. So we made a switch, and it worked really well, and it kept working, and so we just stuck with it. And I think we held them scoreless for, I know for the second quarter, but I think for around 11 minutes of game time. So pretty impressive by the guys.
And you also lost Allen pretty early on in that game.
Yeah. You know, he went down with a severe ankle sprain with about a couple minutes left, I believe, at halftime. But at that time, we had kind of righted the ship. I thought we were in a good rhythm. Stewart was in foul trouble in the first half, so we felt comfortable with him getting on the floor. Of course, when you lose an all-state point guard, it's tough, but Dale Strong and Loudon Sandhoffer really stepped up and did a great job in the championship game.
You got Coach of the Year, and Stewart got Player of the Year, I believe.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some great honors.
Yeah, it is, you know, especially for Stewart. You know, he's put a lot of time and effort in, and he was the best player on the best team, so he's well-deserving.
Any other final thoughts? I mean, this is quite a bunch of seniors. What struck me about this team is when someone went down or had an off game, someone else from the lineup stood up.
No, you're right. You know, it is we preach togetherness and team, and that really was true for this year. I think we had four or five. I think five different leading scorers at different times during the season. I think it's important that you play together as a team, and that was really came true in the last game, you know, with Allen going down and Stewart being in foul trouble. Different guys just stepped up, and that was one of our strengths all year, as I felt we had the best team because we had the best depth and we played well together.
Your last one was 2007.
Yeah,
so 10
years
ago. How does this compare?
You know, I guess it's like comparing your own kids. You can't compare the two or anything, but very special. Very special indeed. And, you know, great for the community. I think we've said it a few times during our interviews that great crowds at home, lots of people following us. I guess there were people all over the town watching the game together. You know, so that makes it even more special that it's a state championship for our team, for our school, and for our community.
And the boys also won state titles in 2007 and 1929. Last year, the girls' team celebrated their first state championship. The state license for what could be the first retail marijuana store here in Petersburg is up for consideration tonight by the Borough Assembly. Restaurant owner Susie Burrell has applied for a license for a retail pot store on Main Street in a part of the building where she operates the Fisherman's Net Cafe. Local governments have a chance to object to a license application under consideration by the State Marijuana Control Board. Petersburg's assembly this winter made no objection to the first license application in the area to go through the process. That was for a grow business starting up at Papke's Landing about 10 miles south of town. Burrell's business is one of only a few in the downtown area that are outside of the state's required 500-foot buffer from schools, rec centers, churches, and jails. Also on tonight's agenda, a resolution to start up a self-pay paving program for local streets. That program would allow certain neighborhoods to petition for pavement if enough of the homeowners are willing to pay for it. And a new ordinance up for vote tonight would make some changes to terms for annual moorage in Petersburg's harbors. That ordinance would eliminate a prepayment discount and increase the minimum length of time to qualify for an annual rate. In other decisions, the Petersburg Community Foundation is asking for office space in the newly renovated borough building. The Assembly also will consider a resolution in opposition to House Resolution 232. That's Alaska Republican Congressman Don Young's measure that would allow states to take up to 2 million acres of national forest land for logging or other uses. The third and final reading of an election timing change is also up for a vote. That proposed ordinance would eliminate the requirement for the borough to hold a special election and would have most issues showing up on the ballot for the October regular election. There's also a discussion planned on ATV use on borough roads. A local man is planning to gather signatures to put that issue on the ballot this October. The meeting is at 6 o'clock tonight. It's in the Borough Assembly Chambers in the newly renovated municipal building. You can hear it broadcast live here on KFSK. Also, tune in just a few minutes. We'll be talking with Borough Assembly members about that agenda, and you're welcome to call in during Borough Business, 772-3808. In other news from around Southeast, a Juneau man says he's optimistic that he'll be able to open that city's second marijuana retail shop soon. Grower Paul Distier tells the Juneau Empire he's faced challenges but expects his company, the Fireweed Factory, to open up in the near future. Distier earned the first conditional use permit awarded by Juneau's Planning Commission in March of last year, following testimony from marijuana cultivators James and Gianno Barrett on his behalf. He's currently growing the marijuana in a small warehouse near the Juneau International Airport. Fireweed has retail space in Juneau that's ready to open, but he has a few remaining hoops to jump through. Distiero tells the Empire that his obstacles include the lack of a local product testing service and the reluctance of banks to do business with marijuana enterprises. A growing number of states are working to help patients make it clear to medical professionals they don't want to be prescribed powerful opioids. Connecticut and Alaska are two of the latest considering legislation this year that would create a non-opioid directive that patients can put into their medical files. It formally notifies healthcare professionals the person does not want to be prescribed or administered the medications. Massachusetts and Pennsylvania passed similar legislation last year. While patients typically have the right to make decisions about their medical care, proponents of these directives contend such documents make a patient's wishes clear, especially in advance of medical care. Proponents say directives also empower the patients who might fear relapsing into addiction or becoming addicted to the drugs in the first place. Tons of scrap metal is piling up in Southeast Alaska's smaller cities. Some are set up their own recycling or disposal programs, but a new effort aims to make it easier and less costly to get rid of the debris. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more on that story.
What do you do with a car not worth fixing, or a broken range, or an outdated wood stove? If you're responsible, you take it to the landfill if there is one. If you're not, you leave it on the street or push it into a ditch or a pit or, in cave country, even a sinkhole. Wherever it ends up, someone needs to deal with it.
In Kluwak, we actually have about a 10-year stockpile of scrap metal that we haven't gotten rid of.
Leslie Isaacs is the city administrator for the Southern Southeast community on Prince of Wales Island.
Is it mostly junk cars or all sorts of stuff?
There's a classification of white metal, which is like your appliances, and then there's junk vehicles, and then just ferrous and non-ferrous metals are the other two major categories.
The same is true in Thorn Bay, about 30 miles to the northeast. City Administrator Wayne Brenner told a recent Southeast Conference meeting that sometimes folks leave more than metal.
A lot of people, when they do move out, they'll bring a freezer out to the solid waste sites, a lot of times still full of frozen fish.
The Southeast Alaska Regional Solid Waste Authority is taking on the problem. It's a coalition of regional governments that already set up a group discount for barging garbage south to a Washington landfill. Now, the authority is negotiating with Waste Management, a large trash hauling company that already operates in Alaska. The plan is to send a barge to collect the scrap metal, then take it south to be recycled. The authority, which is affiliated with the Southeast Conference, thought it had an agreement with another company about 2 years ago. Petersburg Public Works Director Carl Hagerman says it didn't work out because the value of scrap metal dropped by more than half.
But now that we're seeing that price rising, the viability, feasibility of a scrap metal trip for our communities is there again.
It won't happen immediately, but Hagerman says the communities want to be ready to respond quickly.
When the price starts to plateau, that's the time when we really look seriously at doing it to know if there is going to be a cost or even a payment to the communities.
The Solid Waste Authority will set a basic price for the service. Thorn Bay's Brenner says each city will then have to negotiate supplemental contracts.
Every community has a little bit different setup. They have a little bit different process in shipping. And some of us that are closer to the markets hopefully get a little better break than the ones further away.
Petersburg Wrangell and the Prince of Wales Island communities of Craig, Kluwak, Thorn Bay, Kassan, Heidelberg, and Kaufman Cove are involved. Kluwak's Isaacs says the group effort can make it work.
You know, if you can take the barge and make a complete circle through southeast and stopping at every community, is there enough metal there to make it worth your while? And getting to Petersburg, getting to Kluwak, and sharing some of those fixed costs of the running the barge and the equipment, it would make it a much more cost-effective procedure.
No one's really sure how much metal needs to be moved, but the best guess so far is about 3,000 tons. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Wrangell has been trying to replace its hospital for over 5 years. After several stops and starts, the Wrangell Medical Center Board seems to be one step closer to a new facility. Aaron Bolton has more on that story from Wrangell.
The board approved a $24,000 feasibility study in February, which is now getting underway. BDO Center for Healthcare Excellence and Innovation Director Michael Congito is conducting the two-part study.
We wanted to determine the amount of debt that the hospital can safely afford to carry on its books, so we are doing a debt capacity analysis first, and then we will come back and do a feasibility study report, which discusses a lot of the hospital's operations and volume and financial projections for the future.
Congito explained the study to the board Wednesday. Juneau architect firm Jensen Yorba-Lant will be working with Congito to create a preliminary design for the building, destined for borough-owned land off Wood Street. Senior architect Wayne Jensen has been speaking with department heads and hospital staff to estimate the size of the new facility.
The whole point is to look and see what would be in a new building compared to what they have now, and then to take those interviews and develop a what's called a program, a space program.
The space program will determine how many rooms will go into the new building, determining the required space and overall size of the structure. Jensen and his partner, Joanne Lott, will then create a preliminary design, which will be compared to Congido's feasibility study. The design will be a jumping-off point for not only what the new building will look like, but will determine if the hospital and borough can afford it. Jensen added that after spending time in the medical center, there's no question it's nearing the end of its life.
It's getting to be old. There's leaking pipes, spaces that have been converted into offices or program spaces that used to be storage rooms or restrooms, and so, you know, they're just really struggling for space up there, and they're providing good services, but I think it's time to look at a new building. So
the design will also factor in other costs, such as permitting, inspections, and new equipment.
Those kind of things that will provide a total project cost, and then once we have that total project cost, we can evaluate that against the feasibility study to determine, you know, how those match up.
The first half of the feasibility study and preliminary design are expected to be complete within the month. Medical Center CEO Robert Rang says the board will present its findings to the Wrangell Borough Assembly. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And for KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicknicki. Coming up on KFSK, we have Borough Business, our call-in show. That'll be on in just a few minutes after the weather and messages. Later this afternoon, Street Beat Music, Chuck Rose, your host, and it's Sideline Sports at 2:30 with High Country Music, with Steve Berry, your host, at 2:40 this afternoon. At 4 o'clock, All Things Considered, local news and updated weather at 4:30. And Alaska News Nightly on early tonight at 5 o'clock, followed by more All Things Considered at 5:30. 6 o'clock, a live broadcast of the Petersburg Borough Assembly meeting. And at 9 o'clock, Alt Latino and All Songs Considered. 10 o'clock, Radio Free Petersburg with Deacon Blue, your host.